everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I'm John Scott. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday morning. Holy hell, what a week. I wanted to do more episodes this week, but I feel like I watch hockey until midnight. I wake up and I go, gosh, I can't get another episode in. Then I wash, rinse, repeat. There's another 3-4 games on tap. I'm like, how the heck am I going to do this? So we're doing the best we can, everybody. It is Thursday. There was another hell of a round of games last night. The series are going. The NHL is in full flight. Chickens are dying. Haven't had a chicken update in a long time. I'm tiling my floor upstairs in my new house. It's just been lots going on, trying to cut wood for next year. It's just been a lot of fun. The weather's finally turned. I took the hockey rink down yesterday, which was very bittersweet. Not even sweet. It was just bitter. A non-used hockey rink that I worked so hard to build, only to find out that my property has a slight incline and one end of the rink was at like a foot and a half and the other end had no water in it whatsoever. And then when I was trying to shovel off the snow, I got a hole in the tarp. It was just a disaster, a complete disaster. Moving on from that, I don't want to make this a negative show because it's playoff hockey. It's super, it's so fun, but I'm going to stay in the negative because one of the chickens died. And you're thinking, those of you who are longtime friends of the show, you know, the OGs, you go, oh no, chicken. What happened, Sean? Did a fox, did a possum, did a raccoon, did a hawk, did any number of predators get into your coop or your run and kill this chicken? No, you negative Nancys. No, because I built a very fortified coop this time around. It died of old age. Sweet, sweet little baby Betsy. I don't know what her name was. The kids name them, but the poor chicken, not poor, very fortunate chicken died of old age. My daughter Sophia came to me last week and she goes, Dad, one of the chickens doesn't look so good. It's kind of lumbering around, you know, just keep an eye on it. And I said, I won't, but you know, chickens die. I think it was like 7 or 8 years old. And lo and behold, yesterday, Dad, the chicken's dead. Okay. Start the burial process. You know, we alerted the local funeral home, we booked the time, we got the casket ready, and we took care of everything, and now it is residing in the dumpster by the road. So it was sad, you know, but you know, c'est la vie, life goes on. It is what it is. Moving on, the NHL playoffs. I'm going to try to power through all of these because it's so fun. It is. In I think as hockey fans we have to sit back and I complain about the 1-8 system. Well, we should reseed, or the staying in your own division. It just creates these epic matchups in the first round. But isn't it fun? Isn't it insanely enjoyable to sit back and go, okay, who do we got tonight? Oh, Buffalo, Boston, first round. Oh, Dallas, Minnesota, Tampa Bay, Montreal, Carolina, Ottawa. These are incredible first round series that we're getting to watch. And they wouldn't happen if they just went 1-8. And I just look at basketball. And I go, basketball sucks. Like, honestly, I don't know how you can sit there and watch a first-round basketball game and be entertained. It is so incredibly boring. You get the odd game that's good and competitive. But for the most part in the first round, it's a formality. I check the box score and, like, a team's up by 30 at halftime. Like, what the hell is going on? It's so incredibly boring. Basketball sucks. Tell all your basketball friends, you want to have some enjoyment, some entertainment, some competitive spirit, watch a hockey game. And we're going to start out east. No, let's start out west, because the latest game last night, the Edmonton Oilers playing the upstart Anaheim Ducks, not so mighty. Got rid of the mighty. Didn't like that. But this was supposed to be, you know, just an appetizer for the Edmonton Oilers. You get into the playoffs, you're in the easiest division in hockey, the Pacific Division, the pillow fight division, as coined by Connor McDavid. This was the one that was going to get you ready for the next round, which was going to be Vegas. And then the finals, which is going to be Dallas or Colorado or Minnesota, whoever gets out of that, just death match of a bracket up top there. But not so fast. The Edmonton Oilers are doing exactly what the Edmonton Oilers do, and they're doing it with, how should I say this? I feel like I've seen this story before. Their goalie sucks, their defense is non-existent, and Connor McDavid, and we've seen this in years past, and I don't want to speak ill of him because he is the best player on the planet every time he laces him up, he's always a pleasure to watch. He's having a disappearing act out there, and he's throwing bad turnovers, and he looks frustrated, and he doesn't look engaged. Yes, he has the odd outburst on the power play when he gets the puck behind the net, and he just looks like a speed demon up and down the ice, and you can't even touch him. But for the most part, he's not even there. He's completely checked out. And it looks like this whole Edmonton Oilers team are checked out. They're not engaged. They're not finishing checks. They're not back checking. They couldn't have a care in the world. They want to have an easy game. Draisaitl came back. He looks great. He's got 4 points in 2 games. He looks dangerous on the power play. A couple lucky bounces here and there for him to get some points. But as a whole, other than, the fourth line and third line, Jason Dickinson looks really good. The kid they put in the lineup, Szymanski, looks fun. Savoy's hustling his tail off. This team stinks. They have no business. No business even thinking they should make the second round, let alone another third straight Stanley Cup playoff. And after this season, because it's going to happen quick for this team, because they have no business winning this series. Evan Bouchard. I went back and forth on him this year. I was trying to defend him. I'm like, he plays in a tough spot. He's always out there. The Oilers don't really have much option on the back end, so he's playing against tough competition, always in a bad starting spot. This guy sucks. Unequivocally across the board, he is a terrible, terrible, terrible defenseman in his own zone. He cannot play defensive zone. He is lost. His head is always looking around. Who do I have? Where should I go? When he does get the puck and there is a little traffic, he just tends to throw it willy-nilly anywhere. And that was a direct result of, I think, the second goal or third goal. Cutter Gauthier gets a gift because he just throws it up the middle. He can't defend in the corners. He can't play physical. He isn't taking the puck off of anybody. His defensive zone strategy is just kind of stand around and hopefully somebody else gets the puck, and then he's on his horse, and away we go. And he's a great offensive player. But boy, is it embarrassing to watch him in the D zone. It's downright criminal to watch him in the D zone. And you pair him up with the Darnell Nurse, you pair him up with a Matthias Ekholm, who is old and still trying and knows how to play, and his brain wants to do something, but his body's having a hard time catching up with him. And friend of the show, Connor Murphy, who is more suited to a 5-6 role in my eyes, but is being thrust into some pretty, big minutes for the Edmonton Oilers. And I just don't think he has that capability. He scored a big goal last night, which didn't really mean anything. But what you're left with is a pretty crappy team. And you're playing the Anaheim Ducks. And this should be a complete just walkthrough, a warm-up for the second round. And you're getting outworked. You're getting outplayed. Now you're going back to Anaheim. This young Ducks team looks really fun. Cutter Gauthier is an absolute beast. Like an absolute man-child. Both Carlsons are playing fantastic. So, this could be an upset, and I think it will. And it won't even be an upset because Edmonton stunk in the regular season. They limped into the playoffs. So now all of a sudden we expect them to turn it on? I don't think they have that in their bag. I really don't. I think they'll get out of this first round, maybe. But that's it. The chances of them going to 3 straight were already very slim. And now they're non-existent after watching these first 2 games. It's just, and I saw people online saying, oh, who's better, the last year's team or this year's team? Like, this year's team sucks, you guys. I don't know what you're talking about. They limped through the regular season. At the deadline, they did absolutely nothing. Stan Bowman, shame on you. Shame on you. Your goaltender is a waiver wire pickup who's been dropped by 3 or 4 teams in the NHL, and you expect him to stand on his head? I feel bad for Connor Ingram. He doesn't deserve this. You go out and trade for Tristan Jarry, who's worse than Stuart Skinner. Like, shame on you, Stan Bowman. He needs to be gone. He needs to be fired unequivocally. Yes, you got Connor McDavid to sign for a very, very, very sexy team-friendly deal. That's Connor McDavid. That's not you. Let's just put that out there. It's not like you're hard bargaining, hard negotiating with his agent saying, no, 12.5. I'm not going a penny over 12.5, Connor. No, Connor came into your office and he goes, this is how it's going to be. I'm taking 2 years, 12.5. Surround me with some talent. And he brings in who? He brings in Tristan Jarry? That's it? And you go out and you get Connor Murphy at the deadline? Oh, if I'm McDavid, I'm just... Note to self, assassinate Stan Bowman. Just joking. Obviously joking. But this team sucks. It's frustrating to watch. because you want them to do better. And they just won't. They can't. Who on their team will step up? Josh Szymanski? Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, moving on. We'll stay out west. Dallas, Minnesota, the most enjoyable series to watch to date. It's two juggernauts going head-to-head. The first game was just a blip on the radar. It was an aberration. It doesn't mean anything. The last two games have been absolutely fantastic. Last night, they go to double overtime. Dallas wins it with a power play goal. What can I say? It's the complete opposite of Anaheim-Edmonton. It's two strong coach teams who are playing great defensive hockey, great offensive hockey. Their power plays are outrageously talented. Everybody on that ice wants to win. It's a fun series to watch. Kaprizov was lethal in games one and two. Robertson and Wyatt Johnson. Rantanen kind of didn't really do much in game one. He's dipping his toe into the series. He played great last game, but it's fantastic. But I think the thing that changed the series wasn't, you know, a first-line guy, a second-line guy, a third-line guy. It was Colin Blackwell from the Dallas Stars, a third-line player who absolutely buried Trenin in the middle of the ice in game two. It was a devastating hit, and it changed the tone of this series. Up until that point, Minnesota had pretty much dominated the physical game. They were in on the forecheck. They were having their way with the Dallas Stars. And then in game two, Colin Blackwell everybody's seen the check, but it was a devastating hit, a seismic hit. When you take out one of Minnesota's top forwards, the guy is the leading hit getter of the NHL, and you put him out for the series. Potentially, he didn't play the rest of that game. He didn't play in game three. It's the mentality of that hit. And then to see Colin Blackwell after that hit, just stonewalling everybody, not even smiling, not even cheering, didn't go back to his bench and like whoop it up with the guys, stone cold, all business. It was very chilling, very, very chilling. But what a hell of a hit. And after that, you could just tell Minnesota was like, oh, okay, maybe we can't just skate freely through the neutral zone. Maybe Dallas will have some kind of a pushback. Because up until that point, it was Foligno, it was McCarron, it was Trenin, it was the other Foligno, it was Yurov, it was everybody just doing whatever they want to the Dallas Stars at will. Kaprizov was buzzing around. Ryan Hartman was in the scrums. It was a clinic by the Minnesota Wild, just taking over game one and then into game two. But then that hit happens, and it's like, okay, the Dallas Stars goes, oh, no, okay, we can push back. We don't have to take this. Maybe we can get in Quinn Hughes' face and Brock Faber's face and have some kind of a reaction. And they have. And they go out, and they win game two. And they come out, and game three is a fantastic game. Dallas goes up early. Minnesota comes back, takes a 3-2 lead. Dallas ties it late on a friend of the show, Matt Duchene, goal, which is a beautiful one-timer, by the way. That's a very, very difficult shot to one-time it on your offhand when the puck is going away from you. It's a very difficult one-timer, and he puts it in. They win it in overtime. Obviously, power play boy Wyatt Johnson, who only scores power play goals, wins it for the Dallas Stars, and it's a complete contrast from the Edmonton series, where there's not a lot of grade A chances to be had. These guys are playing solid defensive hockey. When there's a chance to be had, they take advantage of it, and the power play is very, very key. So in my eyes, if you're Minnesota, you need to stay out of that box. Dallas, that's why they won game three, really, was the power play. It was outrageous. It was fantastic. It was fun to watch, and this series hopefully goes to seven. Hopefully goes to seven. Let's stay out west. Vegas, Utah, tied 1-1. Didn't really watch any of these games. Stupid. You know, here's how dumb I am. I upgrade to the ESPN package thinking I can get all the games. And then I go on to turn the games last night. And I'm like, oh, HBO, TNT, what the hell's going on here? So now I have to figure out how to watch games. But I figured Utah would have a pushback. I don't bet on hockey very often, but my buddy has a gambling thing on his phone. I'm like, here's some money. You put in half Utah over Vegas. The odds were very, very good for Utah, and I watched a lot of their games coming down the stretch. And Dylan Gunther is a beast. He's just like Cutter Gauthier. Clayton Keller is so good. And Vegas Golden Knights, John Tortorella, all of a sudden, I think the issues that they had before Torts took over, he went 7-0 when he took over this team. But now they're starting to come to the surface. The goaltending is so bad. The defensive zone structure is not great. So Utah, in my eyes, will win this series. They take game two in Vegas to go back to Utah, tied at one, which is anything you want for a road team in the first round of the first two games. Just notch it up 1-1. And they're going back to Utah, and that place is going to be absolutely bonkers. We'll finish off the Western Conference, Colorado, LA. Poor LA. You have to feel for this team because the last 4 years, they run into the Edmonton Oilers, the best team in the West. And then this year, Edmonton has a down year, and you think, oh, okay, now LA might have a chance in the first round to do something. And then they run into the Colorado Avalanche, and they've been playing great. That's the frustrating thing. LA has been playing so, so good. They should have won game two, but they didn't. Colorado takes the win. All the big guys for Colorado are showing up. The goaltender's playing fantastic, and LA's playing good hockey, smart defensive hockey. They're not giving much to the Colorado Avalanche, but Colorado's just, it's too much too soon. They're too good, too big, too fast, too everything. They are too good for the LA Kings, and you have to really just, somebody doesn't like the LA Kings upstairs because they are just facing the best team in the NHL every single season in the first round, and there's nothing they can do about it. All right, moving east. Let's start with some bad news first. Pittsburgh, Philadelphia. I'm going to take a sip of my coffee, but just let that sink in. Philly is up 3-0 on the Pittsburgh Penguins. 3-0. I don't think anybody wants this outcome. I think when we all saw this matchup, myself included, I thought, you know what, this is a good thing. Pittsburgh can handle Philadelphia. They did it during the regular season. This is a somewhat, much like Anaheim is to Edmonton, not a layup, but when you look at all the other Eastern Conference teams that the Pittsburgh Penguins could have faced, this is a good matchup for them. And they are not playing well. Like, it's not even a case of, oh, bad puck luck. It could have gone either way. We got some overtime games. It is what it is. No, Philly is playing Philly hockey. And this is a case of, analytics. Everybody is very, obviously, and rightfully so, analytics, they do serve a purpose. But if you were to look at the analytical stats after the first three games of this series, and you would look at the shot attempts, and you look at the zone time, and you look at the power plays, and you would look at all of the different key points, the indicators of what it takes to win a hockey game, you would go, without looking at the final score or any of the actual goals, you would go, gosh, Pittsburgh must be dominating this series. The zone time for Pittsburgh is through the roof, like probably 2-1 for the Philadelphia over the Philadelphia Flyers. The shot attempts are just outrageously weighted towards the Pittsburgh Penguins. Everything is in favor of the Penguins. But then when you watch the game and you actually sit back and you know hockey a little bit and you're not just focused on the numbers, it's more than binary. It's more than zeros and ones. There's actually people playing this game and emotions and this and that, whatever. Philly's dominating this game. And they're doing it in a very, very smart, methodical Philadelphia-type way, a workman-type way. If you watch Pittsburgh in the offensive zone, they just skate around. They have the puck, yes, they have possession, but they're not creating any offense whatsoever. It's a very perimeter-based offense. It's a lot of low to high, high to low, attempt to throw it on net. It gets blocked. It gets knocked down. They pick it up. They try to do it again. And it's this type of just shinny-type hockey in the offensive zone. There's no structure. There's no threats at the net. There's none of that. And that's because Philadelphia is so well-coached. They play such a stingy defensive type of game where they don't give you open lanes. You can't go east-west. You can't get shots on net. How many block shots do you see a game by the Philadelphia Flyers? 20, 30? And it might be more than that because there's so many shots that are affected because the guy's in the lane or someone doesn't want to take a shot or Samuel Girardi does 15 spins at the blue line because there's no lane. And Philly, they are putting on a clinic, and it's fun to watch, but it just gets me thinking, I just think they want it more. Rick Tocchet has this team playing incredibly good hockey. Trevor Zegras is a star in this league, but he's still playing solid defensive hockey. Yeah, they give him a little bit of rope, which good coaches do and good players need. But everybody as a whole for this Philadelphia team is playing incredible hockey. And I know it's tough to say and tough to kind of understand that when you look at the zone time and you go, damn, it's 2-1 for Pittsburgh. But this is Philly's game. They bend, don't break. Then all of a sudden you see Owen Tippett streaking away and it's like, shit, they got some talent on this team. But for the most part, it's Konechny, it's Dvorak, it's Forrester, it's Couturier, it's Hathaway. It's all these guys just slogging it out and playing solid defensive hockey. And you play the Rick Tocchet way. That's why Matvei Michkov isn't playing much, because he's a liability. And Rick Tocchet knows if he puts him out there in premium minutes and gives him an opportunity, he'll mess it up. So he's shielding him. He's giving him offensive zone faceoffs because he doesn't trust him. So everybody I've noticed, and where's Michkov? Haven't you noticed him? Tocchet knows his players, and that guy's not ready yet. He's an incredible offensive talent, but in order to win, especially in the playoffs, everybody has to be playing the same way. And gosh, Philly's playing the same way. Ristolainen's playing fantastic on the back end. Everybody. And which brings me to the scrums and all of the extracurricular activity. Pittsburgh is desperate right now. And I feel, and have you guys noticed, and I'm going to go on a tangent here. Every series seems to have these knockdown drag out, but they're not brawls. They're just scrums. And it's all five guys on the ice going at it. But it's just a weird thing to watch, because once you get over the first like 20 seconds of the scrum and it still carries on to the 40, to the 50, to the minute, you just want them to drop the gloves, because then it turns into two guys with gloves on wrestling and face washing and kind of jersey jabbing and punching, but it doesn't go any further than that. And I just want them to drop the gloves. I think everybody just wants them to drop the gloves and go. It's happened in the Buffalo-Boston series, Tampa Bay-Montreal, Carolina-Ottawa, and then happened in Pitts-Philly in game three. It's like, what? Well, it's mainly in the Eastern Conference. These guys are just like, they really do hate each other. There is some animosity there, and I love that. Drop the gloves. Just have a fight. And I saw that in the Montreal game. Corey Perry comes in and immediately sheds his mitts. And maybe this is why guys don't drop the gloves, because they put all 10 guys in the box, and Corey Perry gets 4 minutes because he dropped his gloves. Rightfully so. He went after Carrier, and Carrier's like, dude, I don't even want to do this. But it just gets to a point after like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, where you're in this scrum and you still have your gloves on. And what's the point? What's the point? There is no point. Just let it go or drop the gloves. It's happening every game. Multiple times a game. I don't understand it. And it happened with Philly and Pittsburgh, I guess, to try to wake these guys up. But, like, it's just Pittsburgh's done. It's sad. It's sad to see them go out like this. I thought they would have a better pushback, a better performance. But Philly's actually proving they're a hell of a team. They went on a run at the end of the season to get into the playoffs, and they were just carrying this over into the first round. And they'll be a tough out for the second round for the Carolina Hurricanes or the Ottawa Senators, whoever comes out of that first round. But right now it's looking kind of like the Carolina Hurricanes are going to get out of that first round. All right, so let's go right to that series. Carolina's up 2-0. It should be tied 1-1, but it's not. C'est la vie, that's the way it goes. I want to talk about Brady Tkachuk dropping his gloves in the first shift of the first game of the NHL playoffs versus Jordan Staal. Friend of the show, Brady Tkachuk. I don't understand the reasoning behind this. I get it last year, you know, first time in the playoffs in a long time, wanting to get your team up, you know, get everybody engaged. That's your job. I get it when you're in the Four Nations Cup, it's Canada, USA, you want to set the tone, you're the underdog. Let's go. We're not going to be pushed around by Team Canada. You're playing the Carolina Hurricanes in game one, and it's not like you're fighting the other team's star. You're fighting Jordan Staal, who is, you know, just a legend in this game. The guy just plays incredibly great hockey, plays the right way. He's been doing it for a long time. But this is a lose-lose, Brady. What good comes from this fight? Oh, you one-punch Jordan Staal and he's just done. Yeah, that's kind of what you're supposed to do. And then you look bad because you're fighting an old guy and your team doesn't really get up for it. The only outcome that made sense for me, which was the one that happened, you fight Jordan Staal. He holds on. Everybody kind of just grapples and you tie. You maybe win by a little bit. Carolina gets all the momentum because their guys on the bench go, what a prick. He fought Jordan Staal. Like, what a jerk. This guy's almost 40 years old and you're a young kid who's good at fighting. You're fighting your captain They get amped up for it. They want revenge. They want retribution. They come flying out at you and just are trying to kill everybody. And your team goes, good, great, Brady. I'm glad you did that. And what was the point? I saw a stat online on Twitter or something. It said every game Brady's been in a fight, his winning record is like 25%. Maybe stop fighting. Maybe that's not the answer, because when you're on the ice, he's an incredible hockey player. I don't think he gets the accolades he should for his hands and his ice awareness and just how to control the puck and put the puck in a good spot for his teammates, because he's really, really, really good at it, like really strong at it. So, and then the trade-off between him and Jordan Staal, it obviously favors Carolina. But moving on, the first game, I think Ottawa looked out of sorts. Carolina played fantastic. Allmark played good. You know, for everybody worrying how he was going to do in this series, he played really, really good. I think the key for Ottawa, and in my eyes, they should have won game two. We're already moving on to game two. Tim Stützle needs to score. You know, we criticize all these superstars all the time. You got to show up in the big moments. You got to show up and score when your team needs it. And holy hell, in game two, Tim Stützle should have had four goals. There's no way to talk about game two and the overtime game and Jordan Martinook and the penalty shot and if it should have been and the offside and the goal taken away and all these things without just going back to Tim Stützle needs to score. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around this. He is the key to this team. If he scores any one of those goals, he should have had one right in the first shift. He had a breakaway. He has open nets. He has tips. He's so dynamic. He's so fun to watch, but he needs to score. He needs to show up and just put this team on his back. It's not that he's not trying. He's a hell of a player, and he's making plays, and Tkachuk could have won in overtime too. Anderson made a tremendous save on Tkachuk backdoor. But going back to Tim Stützle, you're the team's best player. This is your time. If he can show up in Ottawa, I don't think this series is over. I think there's a lot of hockey to be played. I think Ottawa, and much like a lot of the other pundits, Ottawa should have won game two. Stützle needs to get going. And I just want to talk about one thing with this series, because as a coach, you know, and Travis Green and Rod Brind'Amour, they're really good coaches. But the luxury of having a line that you can just put out there and feel good about it in any situation, that's such an incredible luxury to have. And both of these teams have those lines. And when I played, the good teams that I was on, we had one line where I could go, okay. Or the coach can go, you go out there. We know we're safe with you guys. They would start them on every period. They would start this line after every goal against. They would start this line after every goal for. During these key moments of the game, to start the game, to finish a period after a goal, where momentum can change hands and you want to calm your team down or continue to have the momentum. Carolina has that line. Ottawa has that line. And it's such a luxury to have that line for a coach to be like, okay, go out. I know I can just put you out there for the next minute. I don't have to worry about anything. The Jordan Staal, Jordan Martinook, Nikolaj Ehlers line is one of those lines. And I've known that, and I think everybody else has known that. But watching the Ottawa Senators, that Ridly Gregg, I like Ridly Gregg. I think he's Ottawa's best player so far in these first two games. He's incredible. That line with him, Cousins, and Giroux, they're all over the ice. They are in the offensive zone. They were constantly pressuring the other team. They do everything. Cousins is a maniac out there. Giroux's his normal pesty self. And Ridly Gregg, he's solid, you guys. Watch Ridly Gregg when you watch the Ottawa Senators. He is fun to watch. So if there's one series, not that they're all 2-0, but if there was ever a series where a team could come back, I think Ottawa could easily come out of Ottawa tied 2-2. They've been two very enjoyable games. I don't see this series being over at all, even though Ottawa is just crushed by that overtime loss. And Jordan Martinook, not the most skilled player, but gosh, he plays a good hockey. I play with him in San Jose. He's a good hockey player. All right, moving on. Tampa Bay, Montreal. This series not in 1-1. An enjoyable series. It's just penalties. It's nonstop penalties up and down the ice. It's whoever wants to be more disciplined will win this series. And to me, it seems like Tampa Bay has no interest whatsoever in being disciplined. They want to fight. They want to hit. They want to play the dirty game, whether it's Kucherov, whether it's anybody. It's an enjoyable series to watch. But whatever team decides to play disciplined and whatever team decides to just play hockey, I think will win this series. And I think that will be the Tampa Bay Lightning eventually. but they just need to stop the crap. Like, just play hockey. I don't know why. And we talked about this. I don't know who I talked about this with on the show, but it just seems like they've decided that they're the bully. They've decided that they're going to play that game regardless of the score, regardless of the outcome. That's who they are. They won't be pushed around. After every whistle, there's going to be a scrum. And it's just like, damn, like, guys, like, stop. You're shooting yourselves in the foot. Game two, after every scrum, it seemed like Tampa Bay was taking the extra and Montreal was going on the advantage. So I think if they just stop and play 5-on-5, they'll be fine. But we'll see how it goes. It's entertaining hockey. It's great hockey. Dobusch is playing fantastic. Vasilevsky's playing good. But just stop with the crap, Tampa Bay. And I think you'll be fine. Don't give these Montreal kids even a glimmer of hope. Then I think you'll be okay. All right, last one. Last but certainly not least, Buffalo-Boston. You know, game one, Boston doesn't dominate, but Jeremy Swayman standing on his head. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but what I want to say is the difference between having that guy on your team versus having just high-end stars that don't show up in the playoffs, that don't show up in big moments. And I think Buffalo has found out that Tage Thompson is that guy. He's incredible. When the moment's the biggest, he shows up. We saw in the Olympics, he was outstanding for Team USA. And in game one for the Buffalo Sabres, he was downright lethal. He was doing everything in the D zone and the offensive zone. He was playing physical. He was in the scrums, scoring big-time goals and big-time moments. And it was just a hell of a game to watch. And the atmosphere in Buffalo was absolutely electric. And you couldn't help but feel like game two was going to be a letdown. How could you top that? How could you maintain that passion and intensity for another game after that high of coming back, winning the game 4-3? You're feeling great. The town's buzzing. You almost knew you were going to lay an egg in game two. And sure enough, they come back and the Bruins just waxed them in all facets of the game. It wasn't even close. But in the long run, this could be a good thing for the Buffalo Sabres, because they showed they can come back in game one. They have that resiliency. They're a great team when they want to be. But in the playoffs, you have to do it every single game. You can't take games off. And for this team, they're learning things. This is a huge learning curve for these Buffalo Sabres. Very few of them have been to the playoffs. Obviously, Alex Tuck, the Stanley Cup champ. But it's not like these guys have a lot of playoff experience. And you learn these things along the way where, yeah, you know, you won game one. And you're feeling good, but how do you think Boston's going to feel coming into game two? They're going to be pissed. They're going to come at you even harder. They're going to want to tie this game up. They're not going to roll over just because you came back and played a great third period and scored four unanswered. No. There's a pushback, and the Sabres were not ready for it. Boston dominated game two. David Pastrnak did what David Pastrnak does. He's already got 5 points in two games. The guy's playing incredible hockey. But this will be a good for the Buffalo Sabres in the end. I think they'll go to Boston. I think they'll right the ship. And keep in mind, Boston, I think, won the season series 3-1. So this isn't a case of, oh, they dominated them in the regular season. They have their number. Boston is a good team. Not as good as the Buffalo Sabres, but this series rightfully could go 6 or 7. And all of these lessons and all these little things that the Buffalo Sabres are learning, if they win this round, will be a benefit to them going forward, because it doesn't get any easier in the Eastern Conference. They're going to be playing another juggernaut team in the second round of Tampa Bay or Montreal. So it's a good thing. I know it seems like a letdown. It's like, oh, crap, maybe we're not that good. You'll be fine. I think the Sabres come out, they win two in Boston or even split, and they'll be good. They'll win this series, hopefully. But boy, you have to give the Bruins some kudos. Because the bounce back that they have was really inspiring. A lot of teams would have just rolled over and go, gosh, that's the best we had. And they came back and they just threw right back in their face and the atmosphere and the environment and the Buffalo and the streak and this and that. The Bruins just said, no, we're okay. David Pastrnak said, no, we're good. Jump on my back. You got Geeky. You got all these guys. They played fantastic. Swayman's putting on a clinic as it is. And this series ain't over. And when you look in the East, Buffalo, Boston 1-1, Tampa, Montreal 1-1. It's fun to watch. When you look in the West, there's a lot of 1-1 series, a lot of 2-1 series. The parity of this season, not knowing who's going to make the playoffs, it's bleeding into the playoffs because all these matchups are incredible. These are very evenly matched teams, except for Colorado, LA, who's 2-0, and Philly Pitt is 2-3 rip. I think every other series, it's still up in the air. Any team can come up with the win. So very enjoyable. not as enjoyable as, you know, throwing a chicken in a dumpster, but it's close. And I appreciate everybody coming along with me. I'll do another show on Saturday to recap the latest games. But holy hell, it's a lot of fun. Enjoy it, everybody. And I'll talk to you later. Cheers.